Accession number 18499, Reel 4.
John Aldridge, Reel 4.
We skirted around across Switzerland coming back, and I remember seeing the lights, and then across France, because France was then pretty well occupied by our people then. And halfway across France, a second engine started playing up and absolutely shook the whole flipping aircraft. And it bits me at the feather, another engine. So we were on two engines. And we were getting well across France, and Ken, the pilot, said, "What do you think? Shall we make for emergency landing in France?" And on one of the air, because we had emergency drones, and those at that time, no, we'd occupied some. But we said, well, we said, let's make for Manston. We hadn't got a very long sea crossing to get across there. So we were going on leave shortly. So we didn't want to get stuck in France. So anyway, on two engines, we made across to Manston, which was the emergency runway there, with a huge length and width. And there we lobbed in. And we stayed there overnight. Because on occasions we'd gone and picked up other aircraft from other crews whose aircraft had landed on these emergency aerodromes. We thought we'll wait here a day or so and they'll come down and pick us up somebody. Of course we got the order through, you've got to come back by train. And so we'll stay overnight in London and catch a train the next morning. Well, we left there and went to London because we were in our flying boots and that sort of thing. We had a parachute with us. And we came up to London. We were supposed to stay at the Salvation Army Hostel near King's Cross Station overnight. Because Tom went home, he lived in London. And the rest of us went up to Leicester Square. And we went to the Odeon. I remember there was Mickey Rooney or something on Leicester Square, Odeon. And we went up there and the old manager was there. So he gave us free. He saw we were dressed like we were. I remember it was snow or slush on the ground. And he let us in free for this film show. And we went to the pub for a drink afterwards. And some bloke in there offered Lou a fiver for his parachute. I always remember that. And then we stayed the night at...
Did he sell him it?
No. And then we stayed the night at the hostel and caught the train back to Grantham the next morning. So that was quite an eventful trip all round.
Then, for the rest of January, you seem to have had no operation.
Yes, January was a very bad month. I mean, the training people weren't getting through. And it was after January, because the operation tour was 30, up to Christmas and that. And they stuck it up to 36 after January, because the crews weren't just getting through. So we had got another six trips to do on top of the number we'd done then.
What do you mean the crews weren't getting through?
From training. The training schedule was so well disrupted by the weather that they weren't getting enough train crews through to fill the losses and that sort of thing.
So February the 1st, operation on Zeigen.
Zeigen, S-O-E-G-E-N.
Zeigen.
Yeah, which was just beyond the Ruhr, just south of the Ruhr, I think. It was just a town attack. And I always remember, I think that night, We saw a ME-262 jet for the only time we ever saw one streaking across the sky that night. Otherwise, it was a straightforward attack, as far as I remember. It was a small town, and relatively small. And
then you've got 8th of February on Politz oil refinery.
Yes, that was a very big... big oil refinery on the just north of Stettin on the Baltic. And here again we went across Sweden and down to the Baltic down there, that route. And I also remember just before our bombing run, we had a contact on our village inn, AGLT, and we had to take evasive action on the run. And we didn't I dropped the bomb. We managed to keep steady to drop the bombs, but I think afterwards we had another indication that this aircraft was still behind us, and we had to swing off. And I think if I looked at my photographs afterwards, and they're about a mile and a half away from the target. I think that was because we had to take evasive action immediately after we dropped the bombs. But and then we lost it. We had one engine pack up coming back. I think, did we land on three engines?
Yes, you put that.
Yeah. We landed on three engines that night coming home. But they were long trips to the Baltic. Across, we used to go across Denmark, Sweden, and then down.
Then 13th of February, the Dresden Raid.
Yes. Well, that's famous or infamous, whichever you like to say. My recollections of it really are the number of different turnings we made, different legs we flew in different directions that night. And we went across France and Belgium, headed for Cologne, and turned off as though we were going to Kassel, and northeast, I think, towards Magdeburg, and then as though we were going to Berlin, down as though we were going to Leipzig, and then swung off to Dresden itself. I always remember one thing about the raid was that it was the highest wind speed I ever set on my bomb site, about 70 degrees at the height we were. And of course, the raid was split into two. We were five group operators, a group, and the rest of Bomber Command were coming in an hour and a half after we'd bombed. I think our time on target was about past 10. Well, that was, I remember that we could quite clearly see the target indicators. Of course, I mean, the fires weren't burning like they were later on. And the actual bombing was easy because I can't remember, only very little flak. Had no fighter opposition. And the route home was easy, apart from the length of time. I mean, it was just another town, I mean, to us. I mean, if Harris had told us to bomb Timbuktu, I suppose we would have done. But, I mean, it meant nothing to me that it was Dresden. I mean, we'd been told that the Russians were only less than 100 miles away, I think. And we were issued with Union Jacks to put across the chests with the words "I am English" in Russian on them, in case we were bailed out and the other side of the line. But we didn't think much of that, really. I thought that might be more of a target than anything if we had those across the chest. But anyway.
You put seven cans in brackets on that road.
Incendiaries.
Does that mean canisters?
Yes. They're the little 4-pound incendiaries, about a foot long or so, or a little more, and they packed in canisters. Little bars across the bottom, because the canisters didn't drop. You just dropped, the bars came off the canisters and the incendiaries dropped, and you took the canisters back for them, refilled for the next time.
Then the next day, 14th of February, to Rosyth,
yes,
oil refinery.
Main force went to, because this was the time that they were supposed to be helping the Russians by bombing those, what's it, Operation Thunderclap, I think they called it. Chemnitz was the next one, which was right over toward Dresden Way. The main force were bombing Chemnitz that night. I mean, the night before, we'd gone in before main force and really got the target alight before the main force came an hour and a half later. But this time, Harris, probably old Bennett, wasn't very happy about Five Group doing this sort of thing. Pathfinder commander, I don't think. But anyway, the next night he decided the 8-group Pathfinders would mark Chemnitz and the main force would bomb it. And we would be switched to one of these oil targets with our smaller number of aircraft. Well, what I most remember, I don't remember much about the actual target and the bombing, but we joined up with the force withdrawing from Chemnitz when we came back with the withdrawal route, and they'd done their bombing. And I remember the bombing was absolutely scattered. 20 miles, I think, we saw fires and things scattered about. Because that night, conditions weren't like they were at Dresden, you see. I mean, Chemnitz was supposed to be bombed just as intensely as Dresden, but it never happened that way. And that's what I remember about that one.
Next one was 19th to Gravenhorst again, the Mittelland Canal.
Yes, we that was quite a, I think that night there was more defensive fire than I'd seen on Gravenhorst before, and that's quite a rough passage if I remember, but I think the bombing went very well. I think we lost two aircraft that night.
Then 21st of February on Böhlen oil refinery.
Böhlen was an oil refinery south of Leipzig. As I remember it, it was a reasonably clear night. And we thought we'd done a fairly good job. Mind you, these oil places, they were getting very, very heavily defended, as much as some of the towns. I mean, their concentration of oil plants over that side where they were producing from this coal that they had there. They were getting short of oil then, and they were intensely defending their oil plants.
23rd of February, operation on Horten.
Horten again. This time we were we bombed the U-boats in December. This time we were attacked the actual ports installations. So I thought there were U-boats being maintained there. And that was an excellent operation. The bombing was concentrated. In fact, I've got a letter which one of our men received from a Norwegian friend of his who'd sent it through from the people who'd lived at Horten at the time. And only two bombs had dropped outside this target area. And, I mean, it's only a small town, really. And they said that was some of the best bombing we'd done during the war on that one. It was a clear night.
Then 14th of March on Lützendorf.
That's another oil plant sat in the Leipzig area. And we got diverted from that one, if I remember, to Witten. But frack was quite intense on that one. And but although we weren't hit, we were lucky again. And that was a straightforward trip.
16th of March on Würzburg.
Yes, that was a town just over the Rhine. That we were, they were trying to concentrate on these smaller rail targets to disrupt their communications when the Americans were all geared up to cross the Rhine, and we were supposed to take out this railway junction here at Würzburg. And I mean, it was a very concentrated ride when you think of it on a small town. And according to analysts after the war, I think 80% of the town was destroyed that night. And we had some opposite. We lost two aircraft that night. But at the same time that night, other forces went to Nuremberg further on. I mean, the night fight, even that's towards the end of the war, the night fighters were really up in strength that night. And I think they lost 17 aircraft that night, and we lost about 7 on our raid over the whole group. Two of ours were right now.
Then it's the 20th of March on Böhlen.
Böhlen again, yes, another oil target. I believe this raid put the thing out of action for the rest of the war. And it was very successful, because plenty of defence. As I say, they were trying to defend their oil plants. But nevertheless, it was pretty well destroyed, I think.
21st, the next day on Hamburg.
Yes, that was an oil plant again. Funnily enough, they were all oil plants then. Relatively short trip to Hamburg. I remember we didn't have any navigation aid at all that day. We didn't. And Tom Gatfield, the navigator, went round on dead reckoning, dead on time. It was a oil plant, and well marked, I remember, when we got there. And that was an early hours morning raid there, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I think. And we had a very concentrated raid on that. And Flack was there, of course, but we weren't troubled. And the thing I remember about that is we crossed the Norfolk coast here, coming back at daylight when we come back, and we could see the American 8th Air Force then circling above, forming up into their formations, ready to go out for that day, which meant just brought it home to you how much round-the-clock bombing was going on in those days.
Last in March was 23rd at Wesel.
Yes, this was the crossing of the Rhine. We were ordered that we had to be very accurate because we should be bombing only a few hundred yards in front of the troops which were ready to cross the Rhine that day, our British troops, that was. Americans were already across further south, I think. And Wesel was a desolate, I mean, they'd bombed it several times before, but we had to bomb it to knock out the actual German forces there. And it was a very concentrated raid at night. And we had a congratulatory message from Montgomery as to the accuracy of the bombing, and there was hardly only one, I think only one stick of bombs fell the wrong side of the Rhine, and they occupied the town the next day once they got across.
Now into April, the 4th of April, this is a daylight on Nordhausen.
Yes, that's one of the rare daylights. It's the longest daylight we did. Right into Nordhausen, which in the end was in East Germany. It's up in the Harz Mountains area. We didn't know at the time. We were just told we got to bomb the town, sort of business. But there, they were producing the V2s in the underground caves there, I think. And I remember we had a good escort. I remember flying across, but it's quite a pleasant thing to go in daylight. It's lovely weather. We had escorts of Spitfires and Mustangs, and down below we could see the old Dakotas were going, carrying the troops in where the advance had been made, and the old Dakotas were going, flying below us, taking, I suppose, further troops in, and I think it was a pleasant flight. That's so unusual to fly in daylight. And so many of the places were burning down below where, you know, the advance was being made by our forces.
Then apparently your last raid was on the 7th of April to Malby.
Yes, that's another oil target. And we didn't have our flight engineer on that one, I know. He'd had to go. His wife had had a miscarriage and he got compassionate leave. And we took another engineer with us, and I can all remember that one. We were taken off and there was just a falter in the engines as we took off for some reason. And I thought, good Lord, we haven't surely got a crash now on after all this lot. But anyway, we picked up and there was no more trouble, and a relatively good trip, as far as I remember.
How did you
fit? But next, yes.
Carry on.
No, you. But I was just going to tell you the story of our rear gunner.
Please.
The next raid we were due on the 9th, I think it was, we were briefed to go instantly on this Loran. When you got jamming on this Loran, we were the most experienced crew. I used to have a little Leica camera fit on the screen and take photographs of the jamming so the boffins could analyse it back here. And I'd drawn my camera and all sorts of things, and we went to briefing. We were briefed, knew the target. And the Winko then stood up with a piece of paper in his hand. He said, "Flying Officer Lee's crew won't be going. I'll tell him the reason after the takeoff." After the taking off, we thought, what the devil have you done wrong? What's gone wrong? And anyway, we went out to see the boys off. Well, the rear gunner in this crew, the reserve crew, who were taking our aircraft, had got ear trouble. And he said, look, he wouldn't be able to go, and so our rear gunner, he'd done three less trips than us, he wanted to finish when we did. So he said, could he take his place? And the Winko agreed, and he went. So we sat there at the runway, waved Roy off and all of them, and we sat there with this other rear gunner who didn't go. And he sat there and he picked four-leaf clovers all at once. And I said to him, we laughed and said, that lot aren't coming back today, you know. And I didn't. Next morning, we went back to the wing commander, and he said, the reason you're not going, he says, they've brought the tour down to 33, and you've done 33, and your tour expired now. So we went back to the hut and changed and went down to the pub for a drink, because next morning Roy's bed was empty still. And I never did hear any more of them. Must have gone in the sea, I suppose. They were known grave people, they are. That was just, I mean, and that was the last loss the squadron had, which is rough.
How did you feel when you finished your tour of operation?
Oh, felt very relieved and happy, I suppose, but we were fools, because after we'd had a fortnight's leave, I came back and Jean was in the WAF, and we said we wouldn't get engaged until I'd finished, because she'd been on RF stations and seen, you know, people of losses, and I felt relieved. We went back and we had an interview with the base commander, and he said, of course, we all agree, we said we'd like to stick together as a crew and do another tour. God, he said, anybody can do a tour of operations. We want people for other jobs, he said. So we all split up then, and different. They wanted me to go on a bombing instructor's course, and I said, because I'd been done a lot of radar navigation, so I said, well, can't I go into radar navigation somewhere? So I sent me to a 1660 conversion unit at Swinderby. The boys were going to train there for Japan, you see, and I was an instructor on H2S, and that's how I virtually finished up then.
Did you ever come across anybody in the air crews whose nerve cracked, who couldn't stand it?
Not really, not as such. We had a pilot who our pilot had trained with, and he turned back so many times with different troubles that they finally took him off. But I mean, that was the nearest I saw to anything like that. But there was, I can't remember, but Tom can remember it. I can remember parade. You know, there was a thing called LMF, lack of moral fibre. They dubbed people if they wouldn't go. And there was one chap on our squadron that they dubbed him LMF. And I remember they had a big parade and they stripped him of the brevi and the rank. And they made him go as, you know, grown staff. But that did happen, of course. But I don't remember, apart from those two incidents, I can't remember who he was now, but that did happen.
How did you feel about cases of low morale yourself?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we used to think, I suppose, well, they ought to stick it out like we do. But I know some people are made up differently to others, aren't they? You probably felt perhaps like he did at times, but you tried to hide it, didn't you, I suppose? But I mean, the main losses were up to people before they'd done 10 operations, really. Most of the losses were in the first operations. I've analysed it somewhere there on our squadron.
How do you feel now, today, about having served in Bomber Command in the war?
Well, I'm very pleased I did. I mean, I think we did a good job. I mean, I came in later on, and I always say if I'd have been in a year before, I wouldn't be here now, but you don't know that, do you? But, I mean, when I went in, five group were a integrated separate group. I mean, I didn't do too many raids where I was joined in with the rest of Bomber Command. We did these oil targets, the canals, all a separate group, and we all thought we were doing a damn good job. And I mean, they'd got this marking system with the mosquitoes. It was very accurate, if the conditions were right. Couldn't do it every time if the cloud base was too low and that sort of thing. But, you know, generally speaking, and I mean, I operate mostly through the winter period, from September to April, which is when the conditions were at the worst.